That was the best keynote in years. Many, many years. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I gotta agree with you.
It's like there was only one like objectively bad thing, and it was a price. And we'll get to that, and it doesn't affect us at all.
No, I don't. That was it was the part that most people were most anticipating, and the part that I cared the least about. But hey,
yes,
different strokes, different folks.
Well, I don't know. I think that even for the people who cared about the Mac Pro, which we'll get to, the cross-platform app development stuff was at least as big of a deal, even for them, for the pros in the world, and it turned out to be something much more impressive than I think anybody was expecting.
Right.
So this is a huge day for the future of Apple's platforms, all of them. And we have a lot to talk about.
It was also a huge keynote.
Yes.
It was 2.5 hours in length.
The thing was, at 2.5 hours, they were still powering through so fast that they skipped over some stuff.
Right.
And I think that we're going to find out more about what's actually coming out over the course of this week, and you know, we may have to follow up in whatever way, but we'll cover what we think we saw, and you know, as usual, we'll do it in keynote order. We're going to keep this to under an hour, and we're 2 minutes in already, so here we go.
Let's go.
So the first operating system that Apple covered today was tvOS. Which I think a lot of people weren't even expecting to see on the show, on the stage at all today, but they came through. Right before actually getting into tvOS features, there was a preview of an Apple TV Plus show, original show, which at the services event that we covered, they didn't show enough of the content, and I think a lot of people were pretty disappointed by that. So this was sort of the first in-depth preview of one of the shows, and it was the show by Ron Moore, who's the showrunner for Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek, and the show is called For All Mankind, and it looks
very good. Yes,
very,
it does.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
My synopsis of it would be like, imagine if the Soviets got to the moon before the U.S., and then the space race never ended and became sort of the dominant scientific and technological and political force of the 20th century. It just looks awesome.
The thing that makes me curious is, will these shows be like limited run shows? Will they be like many, many seasons? I feel like Apple has a opportunity to kind of distance themselves from the traditional way of storytelling where we have to have like 15 season arcs.
Yeah, for sure. We have no idea what that format of these things are going to be. And maybe they can try a bunch of them. But what we know for sure now is that at least one of these shows is going to rule no matter what the schedule of release is. Okay, we've already spent 1 minute on just the TV show before any of the software came out. So tvOS, they didn't mention a version number when they announced tvOS, and they actually didn't do that until very late in the watchOS presentation either. So I was sort of wondering if they were going to drop the numbering conventions for these updates, but I don't think they actually did. And so in any case, tvOS is at version 13. It's in sync with iOS for... I don't even know how that happened, but I guess they just decided to do that when they started calling it tvOS. One interesting thing about this presentation was that Tim Cook handled it himself. I guess they didn't want to spend time getting people on and off stage. But it wasn't the token update that tvOS has gotten in the past. There was actually a lot of great stuff in it. In addition to UI updates, which has like things like a slide over control center panel that reminds you of using other platforms. It also added multi-user support for the first time, which I think is probably the biggest feature. So everybody has their own up next list and recommendations now, and that extends to Apple Music as well. So everybody in the family gets their own profile, and you switch in control center, which I think is sweet. And then they added game support for real game controllers, for Xbox One S and PlayStation DualShock 4 game controllers, which they announced in sort of tandem with another tease of Apple Arcade coming this year. But like that in combination with the best game controllers on the market. I mean, that's really cool.
It's the thing that made me really interested in Apple Arcade for the first time, because I know that that's going to be something that's like fine on the iPhone and iPad, but I wasn't really sold on it for the TV or for the computer or the Mac. But like being able to use these really, really well-made controllers is a total game changer, because I bought one of the controllers alongside the initial Apple TV that was like able to play games, and it was fine. And of course, the thing that you hold in your hands that like controls the entire experience is pretty important. So this is the first thing that actually made me interested in an Apple TV since the beginning of every TV having a smart TV built into it. So I haven't had one of these because all of my TVs are just like Rokus immediately, and that's been enough for the time being, but now I think I got to upgrade once more.
We still haven't seen that much about titles that will be on Apple Arcade, but this bodes well for the level of gameplay that we can expect.
Right.
And then the other thing they announced was new underwater screensavers in partnership with BBC's Natural History Unit, which, you know, great. The screensavers on the Apple TV get repetitive after a while, so it's nice that we'll have a little bit more. That's it for tvOS. Any other thoughts? Any thoughts about the personalization part? That seems like sort of the most exciting development for families.
My thought is I want it for iPad.
Yeah, right. Which we aren't getting.
No.
Spoiler alert, but we are getting a lot of other stuff for iPad. But first we have to talk about watchOS 6. Apple loves to remind us that Apple Watch is the number one watch in the world, which I totally believe now because I see them absolutely everywhere. There were a lot of new features announced. First of all, there were a bunch of new faces, a few of which looked pretty cool.
I liked them.
There were some that I will never use, but there are already a bunch that I will never use. The one that I think I like best, rather than just like go through and describe them all, I think people will get a chance to see them eventually. The one that I'm most excited about is Modular Compact, which has two circular complications stacked vertically in the top left, and then a clock, an analog clock, that's a circle that's twice the size of those to the right of them. And then that takes up like 2/3 of the screen vertically. And then the bottom third, or maybe it's a little more than a third, is a full width rectangular complication. So that's like a lot of, that's three apps with a lot of data and also an analog clock on there, which I thought looked pretty cool. Any other thoughts on faces that they showed?
That was the one that I liked the least. See, that's why you got to got to add a lot of faces.
Yeah. The new digital face also looks really cool. That's kind of always what I wanted. And it looks like a lot more customizable than just the current, what I think it's called X Large. That's just like the huge numerals or like one huge complication in the center. Now it's a lot more, you can change the style of it a lot more. And also the solar face looks cool. The new analog solar face that moves around the dial moves around, like following the cycle of the sun, which is sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, face, lots of new faces. Oh, they added Taptic chimes on the hour, which is cool. I'm not sure if I want that or not.
I do not think I want my watch to notify me about more things. It's not,
fair enough.
Not for me.
If it's the same single Taptic bump that you get for notification, that would be maddening. But maybe they came up with a new pattern or something. But yeah, that's not the most exciting thing. To me, the most exciting thing announced for watchOS is the new first-party apps. In particular, Books is coming with support for audiobooks. Now, Audible was already on the watch. Amazon had already gotten to audiobooks on the Apple Watch. Having Apple Books there is very, very cool.
And it looks good. They did such a good job making it something that's very, very functional, which is what makes me excited and what made me make me use it. Because I listen to podcasts all the time, controlling them with my Apple Watch. That's like the primary way that I control podcasts while I work out, and also just like while I'm running around throughout the day if I'm listening to a podcast. And the way that they seem to have set up Books from a complication makes me believe that it would be very easy to get in and out of them all the time, which is like the dream. So that was super exciting, and I think I'm gonna have to try to buy some audiobooks just to test it out.
The ease of use seems to come with some of the advantages that we get on the watch from something that was very tantalizingly teased by Kevin Lynch in this presentation, where he just sort of ran by saying that there was a new native UI framework coming this year,
right,
and then moved right on. At the end of the presentation, we found out exactly what that was. But already you could tell just from these demos that watch apps are a lot better now. They have much better, much more discoverable, much more like mentally friendly, lower overhead UI designs.
Right. And this is something that we could spend a lot of time talking about. And obviously we can't quite do that right now. But the new apps, which were what? It was Books. It was Calculator. It was Voice Memos. All of these apps were very clearly designed to be used without fiddling with the watch. And I don't know about you, but like I still, however many years into having the watch as we are, still feel uncomfortable like messing with my watch too much in public. I have like a 5-second window that I feel okay touching and looking directly at my watch while I'm like doing something else. And if I spend more time than that, I feel weird. Mm. And these all seemed like they were made to fit within that window of like, look at your watch, click on a button, twist a knob, and like be done.
Yep.
And that kind of stuff is exactly what all the apps need to start becoming. And this is really promising to me that that is what they will become soon enough.
And with all of that comes more independence from the iPhone for apps, which I think is really exciting. He listed three new APIs and capabilities for developers. Obviously, this is a developer conference. He's talking about how to build apps for the watch. He mentioned independent apps so that you no longer have to have a companion iPhone app installed. The way it's worked so far, the iPhone app is sort of the parent and the watch app is the child.
And there are so many apps on my phone that just sit there and like say, good job. Thank you for opening this app. Now. Please now go to your watch to do everything. And it's kind of strange.
So that's not necessary anymore. There's new APIs for watch apps for extended runtime, which I guess just means like more sophisticated stuff going on in the background for a longer time than has been possible in watchOS in the past. And a new streaming audio API. I'm not sure exactly what that was about because I was pretty sure that third-party apps could already stream stuff on the watch, like over LTE, but maybe I'm wrong. Certainly first-party watch apps could, like music and podcasts already could. If they couldn't do it before, well, now they can. Third-party apps can stream audio over the watch's own data connection. All of that led up to the announcement of the App Store itself on Apple Watch, because before you had to use the App Store tab inside the watch app on the phone in order to download apps on the watch. And of course, if you've got an iPhone app, from the regular iPhone app store that had a watch component, that would install it too. But if you had install apps turned on automatically, but now you can go find it on your watch. And that looked a lot better than I was expecting. I'm not sure if it will work as well. Of course, everything's being demoed on Series 4 watches now. So you've got more room to play with and corners that work, which I don't have on my Series 3. So I'm not sure how good it's going to be on the Series 3. But I'm definitely looking to upgrade my Series 3 anyway, so I'm very optimistic about people actually using the App Store app to find and add stuff on board their watch.
It does not fit my 5-second rule, so I will still be onboarding any apps from the phone. But I appreciate that it exists, and it looked pretty nicely done. And there was a theme in a couple of these different moments through the keynote, which I thought was important to me, which was like a move away from grids and lists to something a little more readable. And the App Store was the first time that I noticed that through this presentation. The App Store didn't look the way that you would think a developer might build the App Store out. It felt more... It's hard to like describe, but the pictures felt bigger. There was more spacing in between things. It felt just more natural and usable and readable. And I liked that. Like I want everything to start looking that way. Audiobooks on the watch looked that way too. And truth be told, the calculator did as well when they opened up that screen to get tips and figure out percentages and this and that. So I really, really enjoyed that. And though I will not probably be looking at my watch to like browse the App Store, I hope that more of Apple's development starts to look this way, that kind of reflects what humans need to be interested and look through a long list of different ideas or apps or photos.
Yeah, I think we get some of that built in now with this new native UI framework. I think that largely because this is the point in the presentation at which Kevin Lynch mentioned that. And so the way, as we'll get to at the end, the way that the UI is created for apps on every platform now, as long as they're being written in Swift and built the modern way, is much, much more concise in terms of like what kind of element you're creating. You don't have to like lay out the list. And I think that a lot of the kind of the sort of more, I'm not sure what the word is for it either, but the old way of designing a UI that you're describing, I think comes a lot of the sort of downsides that we got came from programmers just trying to find the easiest way to lay these things out in code. And now it sort of seems like you can just say, okay, I need a list, and it's this long,
right?
And then the UI, like as we'll get to, the language itself is going to handle a lot of the qualities of how this actually looks, and that will both help apps standardize across the platforms and do the right thing for the right device and the right screen size, without developers having to think of every single one of those cases. And I think that's a win for, usability.
Absolutely. I feel like we need to move on from the watch, but I do want to talk about the health app really quick, which got a big redesign and looks great. The way that it seemed to me was that they realized that we're all at the point where we have gotten used to the three rings and are now ignoring them. So they're giving us a lot more information, which is like perfect for me. And this is something that I want to touch on, because the three rings were actually really, really important to me years ago. It's what like got me started going. It's the thing that got me going to the gym and making a consistent workout part of my daily routine, because as an achievement-based person, seeing those rings filled was really, really important. But now it would be weird for me not to go to the gym on a regular basis, and filling the rings is like a no-brainer. And if I don't do it, it's because I was on a flight or something. And then breaking the rings is like useless and doesn't matter. And basically I've stopped paying attention to them entirely, even though they were extremely helpful at a different point in my life. And so now they have this health app that gives you all of these little tips and a bunch of different data points about how you're doing based on, what was it, previous weeks, previous days, previous months?
It says it compares the last 90 days with the last 365 days, which seems like a pretty good heuristic.
I love that, because that's taking into account the fact that every day can't be exactly the same, but you definitely want to have forward progress and momentum, over large stretches of time. So I was super excited to see that. And the other health stuff that they mentioned, they have a new cycle tracking app that I think is coming both to the watch and to the health app itself, if I was understanding it on the iPhone.
The point being that you get it without having to have a watch,
which is awesome. And I love the fact that they're constantly building the health app out to be something that you actually want to use, as opposed to a place where a bunch of data goes and you don't really ever look at it.
Oh, and just to be clear, by the way, that's menstrual cycle tracking, not like bicycle riding tracking. This is a really great feature that I know a lot of people who use third-party apps
totally
and it should have always been as important to Apple as any other vital sign or health metric in the body that they've already been measuring, and it's really cool that it's here now.
I can imagine that a lot of data has been lost because of people getting new phones and that kind of stuff and not like bringing information over. So just having it in the health app and having it synced in iCloud is going to be very, very helpful for a lot of people. And I love it.
One thing I wanted to say actually about the trends that you were just mentioning is, to me, I think the key behavioral thing about that, about the new metrics that they're keeping track of over time, the key thing that's going to work for people is that it's something different every time. You're not just worrying about your three standard rings, and as long as you get those, you're good. It's going to tell you, like, you haven't been doing as much cardio lately. You should probably here are some suggestions for workouts you can do to make sure that you're keeping up with your cardio health, which is like so much more specific. But it also breaks you from the routines you might have gotten in for like closing your rings every day. And by sort of pushing you in places where you need to be pushed, when you need to be pushed, it's going to bring your attention to things, and it's going to let you sort of do your thing naturally if you're healthy and fine. So I think that's a much more psychologically effective way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The one other health feature that they announced was a new app called Noise, and it's to measure, it's to help with hearing health, and it uses a microphone on the watch to send you an alert that you're in a loud noise environment that can hurt your hearing. And the app on the watch shows a live measure of the noise, and there's even a complication, so you can just look at your watch face and see how loud it is. And they mentioned the privacy features of that as well. It only samples audio periodically, and it doesn't record or save anything. So I'm psyched about that as a music person. And I'm also worried that it's going to tell me that every single live music experience I have is too loud.
That's how I feel too. Very grateful for this feature and very nervous about how often it will make me nervous in the future. And honestly, yeah, a little glad that this didn't exist last year when I was in the middle of a bunch of construction for the coffee shop that I own, and how badly I would have felt for all the times that we were doing construction while we were open. It would have not made me feel good to get little alerts on my watch saying that I was temporarily hurting people's hearing. So thank you for this app, and I may turn it off, depending on how much it stresses me out.
Hi, Internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together. Now, iOS 13. They didn't say this at the beginning of this segment, but just before the keynote started, it was leaked in legal documentation on Apple's websites that iPad OS was becoming a separate thing from iOS. And so they said iOS 13 and then proceeded to only talk about the iPhone. And because it was before the iPad in the presentation, they didn't give us the satisfaction of telling us that yet. They just were only showing iPhone features for this entire segment for the most part. And I thought that was an interesting choice. But as we all know, Apple keynote segment order is in order of like drama. And to put the iPhone before the iPad is pretty satisfying as like, you know, to me, as someone who's almost entirely working on an iPad now, thinking of it as my primary computer, I like that iPad got promoted above iPhone in this at this event. But that's not to say that there wasn't a ton of awesome stuff announced for iOS 13 on the iPhone. So let's get into it.
And it started with a big old dunk on Android, which was yes, like maybe the biggest dunk on a competitor that I feel like Apple's taken in a long time, which was interesting to me. I feel like they've kind of moved away from that and just talked about their own products and not really been interested in what everyone else is doing. But it was a pretty juicy stat, so I understand why they felt the need.
And so they started with Tim's favorite stat, which is customer sat, as he calls it, or customer satisfaction, 97% for iOS right now, which is pretty amazing. But then, owing maybe largely to the upgrades in iOS 12 last year that sort of helped people with old phones, and they broke that pattern of that people felt like Apple was in of making of every update making their phone worse. They got to 85% installed base for iOS 12, and that's really amazing. And then he said those other guys, got 10% adoption. And then he did put up the slide, and it said Android 9. The latest version of Android got 10% adoption, and it came out before iOS 12 came out. And that is awful.
The crowd really enjoyed it.
That's not even competition. Yes, so the people here to develop for Apple's platforms were very happy about that. Then Tim brought out Craig Federighi, everybody's favorite, the best presenter at Apple, and he went so fast, and I think I missed the smallest percentage of stuff in the iOS section, but that might just be because the volume was so incredibly high. The first thing he talked about was speed, which was a nice thing to talk about first. Face-to-face ID is 30% faster. App downloads are now 50% smaller and updates are 60% smaller, which means that they download way faster. And app launches are now 2 times faster, which is
pretty wild.
Amazing that they can still do things like that for a platform this mature. Then the first feature they wanted to talk about, perhaps unsurprising given the level of interest there has been in it, was dark mode. And they showed it with a video that was very classy. And then he took us on a tour of dark mode on iOS. It's not a total surprise that this is coming out this year, even like rumors aside, because it shipped in macOS Mojave last year. But they have new black or dark UIs for all of their native stuff. And like darker shading for the widgets and the dock and all the other translucent things. And it's going to look way better in the dark. I hate having white UI still when I'm using my phone in the dark for something, especially like messages or mail, where the entire, like where there's just tons of white space. I'm really excited for that to become dark space in the dark.
This is going to be people's primary way of using the phone. A lot of people are going to keep their phone in dark mode because it looks good. It does not look at all like it's, you know, a secondary mode just for being used in the dark. Notes looks killer. Yes. And a lot of different apps look very good this way, including iMessage, which is so full of white that it's kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that a lot of people are going to switch this mode on and not switch it off for weeks until they get bored of it or remember that the light mode exists.
Yep, they didn't talk about how it goes on and off. I keep wanting them to just say dark mode can be set to go on and off when night shift goes on and off.
Right.
Like, doesn't that make sense? But they haven't done that yet. But I did at least in one or two slides or demos see that there's a control center toggle.
That's right.
For it,
that's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what else? They oh man. Totally just slipped it right in there.
I know
swipe,
what this is going to be
typing,
for you. Yep.
The quick path keyboard, as they called it. This is something I still use all the time, and I have Gboard installed just for that reason. And now Gboard is worse than Apple's keyboard at, you know, getting punctuation right and stuff. It's just like not what I want to use. But I have to type one-handed so often that I still keep it on board. And so now Apple has their own quick path keyboard and it's coming to iOS. This showed up in very interesting ways later in the presentation when they got to iPad OS. But just to have that on the phone is so great. Have you been used? You said last time we talked about it that you were thinking about installing it. Did you end up doing that?
You are a good evangelist for swipe typing. And so I installed this Gboard keyboard and I hated it. So I turned it off. I like the idea. But the keyboard was terrible, and I just feel like third-party keyboards on the iPhone get such a bad way of going about it, and you open an app, and it's not pulled up, and it just got really confusing. So I'm excited to try this again, really just because of how excited you are by this keyboard, because it must be good, and I feel like you're going to be turning this feature on for a lot of people's phones.
I sure hope so.
When you see them in person and trying to convince them that this is the true way to
Oh, you mean without asking them.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe asking them. Yeah.
Right.
I'm guessing this is going to be a toggle or something or a secondary keyboard, and I feel like it's definitely going to be off, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, I'm actually not sure. I'm not sure that it doesn't just start happening if you start sliding your thumb around. We'll have to see.
But what about the way that you control the cursor?
That's a long press or force touch.
So you can just swipe around. I didn't really think about that.
We'll have to see. They certainly didn't spend enough time on it to show us that.
Yeah. We'll find out later.
Yes. Oh boy, do we have to keep going. New share sheet. This was something that you called out. I was also very stoked about it, but I was still like buzzing with the announcement of the quick path keyboard. But the design of the share sheet is like good now. Like, not that it was, I mean, it just doesn't make sense before.
No. We'll say it. It was bad.
Yeah.
The two rows that I never understood what the difference between the two rows were.
Yeah.
The way that everything went. It basically seems sort of like they looked at Siri suggestions and then made the share sheet, which is great.
Yeah.
Because
which it has. It has Siri suggestions.
That's, yeah, exactly. So you can just basically, it'll try to guess what you're going to do when you click share and help you do it. And I love
including who you're going to send things to and how you're going to send extend things to them, which is really cool. And it looked like they didn't show it at all. But so the second row, the black and white row, or the grayscale row that that is, I believe, called the action row. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be for things that are more specific, like do the same exact thing every time with this information, as opposed to the row of app icons, which is send it to this app. The row of app icons is still there, but now it looks like the action row below the row of app icons is now a vertically scrolling list of buttons that just explain what each button does. And maybe there will be, more standardized ones instead of letting third-party apps kind of do whatever they want there.
Right.
Whatever they have done with that third section, it's better than the second row that is confusing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep pushing us forward.
Yeah.
We skipped over the Apple Music feature on tvOS of time synced display of lyrics while you're listening to songs. That's very cool. It's also on iOS. Safari got a ton of updates that I couldn't see because they went so fast.
Yeah.
But one thing I saw was that it has preferences per website, which is really going to help with that, as people have varying degrees of like wanting to lock down sites or prevent them from doing spammy things.
Yeah.
Now you can do that per site.
Yeah. We can talk about all of these, but I'm just going to say that basically the keynote felt like them saying Safari is better. Mail is better.
Yes.
Notes is better. Reminders is better. Maps is way better. Everything is better and you're going to be very happy with it. And
it was
kind of mind numbing.
That is the bottom line, but I want to drill into some of them. There are one-liners about Mail and notes that I want to say. Mail got full-blown rich text support, which I'm so happy about. Fonts, you can style text in Mail finally.
Just being able to actually do things. It wasn't even like I wanted to style the text, but it was like I wanted to be able to control it at all. And the amount I feel like Mail might be one of the real pain points for non-tech people. I've noticed that with my wife. She'll often copy and paste text into Mail and it'll look crazy, and then she'll send it and it'll look crazy, and there's nothing that you can do within Mail to stop that from being true. So now you can.
I have all kinds of shortcuts for cleaning up rich text or converting Markdown into rich text that's plain for pasting into Mail, just in order to add links to text, and I'm really glad I'm not gonna have to do that anymore.
Exactly.
Notes got a new gallery view that looks very cool. It just sort of has a two-dimensional layout with previews instead of just the scrolling list. And it also got shared notes folders, which is awesome. Gonna use that a lot. So I assume that works the way you would think, where if you have a shared folder with someone, every note you add into that folder becomes instantly shared with everybody. So that's sweet. They also showed something that had leaked a little, completely rewritten Reminders app, the features that were beyond just the one screenshot of its slightly different menu UI that it got are that it has machine learning typing, Fantastical style, natural language. Remind me to do a thing at home at 9 o'clock. You just type that into a box and it turns it into a reminder. There's a quick suggestion bar below the text of the reminder for adding metadata and attachments. It adds nesting tasks so you can have subtasks of tasks. And it has smart lists, which I don't actually fully know what that was because it went too fast again. But I'm guessing it's ways of servicing of various reminders that it's all your reminders at home or something like that, that get pulled together automatically no matter what list they're on, something like that. Or you can create lists on the fly. That's the kind of stuff it looked like it was doing. But the coolest feature, the feature that will take over the most of my use of reminders from OmniFocus, is that if you tag a person in that quick bar, you will get a notification from Reminders when you're in the messages thread with that person that you have
crazy.
To tell them something.
It's so good. Cool. Yes. This is really what I want the iPhone to become, is it's smart enough that it will know what I'm doing better than I do when I'm in different apps. And this was the first time that I saw that happening, and it made me very excited about the potential for that kind of use cases in the future.
Yes. Maps got tons of updates. so excited about all of them. First of all, the whole US will have all the new map data by the end of 2019. And I've just using it and traveling around in California.
It's this awesome.
Spring and summer. It's so much better. Mm-hmm. If you have not seen maps, Apple Maps with the new data, you are never going to use Google Maps again. No, I don't have Google Maps installed on my phone.
Yeah.
And that was just true of the maps data here before, but there's so much more in terms of features now that are just way better than Google Maps.
Yeah.
The favorites are new. That's worth mentioning. Like, you get names and icons for the things you go to every day, and you just tap one button and you're already getting directions to, you know, to the gym or to the store or whatever, to the office. The thing I've been waiting for the longest time in maps has arrived. They called it collections. You can create collections of places with names. You can share them with each other, and you can, you know, just have, you know, your favorite Mexican restaurants in LA, like, as a collection of places, actual places, with their actual, you know, addresses in there that you can get directions to. You can see all of their Yelp data like you already can in Maps, and it's all just there saved as a list in Maps. I have tried so many different solutions for this, and all I settled on was just sending them with the share button from Maps to Notes. And then you have to just manually go in there and update it. And, you know, it doesn't have like any of the business information, like if they're open now or whatever. Having it in Maps is obviously the way it's supposed to work.
Yes.
And I'm so, so ready to just move all of those notes back into Maps where they belong.
I too have had like 5 of these different apps throughout the years, and then they are not profitable, and then they stop getting updated, and then they're no longer usable, and then I'm sad.
Exactly.
And I believe that Google Maps has a really good shareable collections type feature, but from what I understand, they've actually been making it worse over the last 2 years or so. So I know a few people who have really loved it, have used it, have called it like the best thing about Maps, and have been moving further and further away from it or using it less and less because it just isn't as good. So right. I'm excited about this feature for me, but also for shared collections. I would like to have people's shared collections, please.
Yep. Just tell me all of the sushi restaurants in Kyoto to try.
Yeah, there's a list, an Apple note that I have that's every restaurant that's good in San Francisco, according to this person. But it's like a nightmare because in a list, it's impossible to understand. I would really
you want
to
see where they are
for one thing. Pins. So here we go. Yes. We got it now.
Yep. So, and then they added Look Around, which is the thing that will just make Google Street View seem stupidly old in comparison. I mean, I'm sure that they'll come out with the same thing eventually, but like basically you can drive down the street. You can just float down the street of places, and you can see in 3D, you can see their entry and maps. So you can walk down the street in the neighborhood of your hotel, and you can pick places out, you can see everything about them, and you can save them to a list, and then you can go there in person.
It was
so perfect.
This was the most Apple thing in a long time, because the way that I describe Apple to people who don't understand Apple is that they don't ever release anything until it's perfect. So how long ago did Google Maps Street View come out? Like,
I can't even remember.
12, it was before 13 I was writing years about ago? Tech. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have been assuming that Apple would do this for a long time, and they just have not done it until they could do it their Apple way, which was really good and perfectly done and with high-res photos and with the ability for it not to feel clunky trying to go back and forth between places. And it does not shock me that they're releasing it as they are also talking about augmented reality a lot, which they have done, and we'll talk about more, because I could imagine that there's some interesting implications for being able to walk around in a perfectly photographable street view. So we'll see what that bodes down the future. But I'm just going to be playing with this thing so much. I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. That I think is the peak of the iOS 13 section. There's a lot more still, but I'll blast through it. You can now just share location with an app one time and require it to ask again next time. That's very cool. There's also some more privacy features around location, including you get reports for apps that you do let keep tracking you, and they've prevented a way that people were working around the inability to use your location by checking what Wi-Fi networks and Bluetooth devices were nearby, and you can't do that anymore. Good. huge news. You can now, they created a sign in with Apple API so that you no longer have to use Facebook or Google accounts to log into things, including apps, but also it's also available on the web. You authenticate with Face ID or Touch ID or whatever, and you get an account on that service without sharing any personal info. It does allow services to request an email address, but if you choose to hide your email address, Apple creates a random email address for that service that forwards to your real address that you can always kill whenever you get tired of something.
So yeah. Happy about this. I want everyone to use this immediately, please.
Yes. I'm going to stop using things that don't let me use it. It's
totally.
Just that
simple. Exactly. Yes.
HomeKit got secure video analysis. This seems really cool. We do have a HomeKit video camera that we use. We have a non-HomeKit video camera that we use as a baby monitor. And I don't trust it one bit, and I don't like it, and I unplug it when the baby's not taking a nap, and I don't like that it's filming our baby taking a nap. HomeKit created a new section of HomeKit called Secure Video that analyzes, rather than sending the video to the cloud, it analyzes the video on your HomeKit hub device. So your iPad or HomePod or Apple TV, whatever you've designated as your Apple HomeKit hub. Those are now all computers that are powerful enough to just locally analyze a bunch of video. And then it sends it encrypted to iCloud. So Apple can't see it. But you can use the app to review. You get an alert if something weird happens, and you can review the recording that's sent to iCloud because it's pulled down and decrypted on your devices. And you get 10 days of storage for those videos, and it doesn't count against your iCloud storage. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
HomeKit-enabled routers. So routers create vulnerabilities for things, for like, you know, your hub, your like, light bulbs or whatever kinds of HomeKit of hubs you have plugged in to your router, like that can be a security vulnerability. So now there are HomeKit-enabled wireless routers that will firewall off those accessories. And the first brands they mentioned are Linksys and Eero. So I guess I'm buying a new router. And they also said that ISPs, and they named only Spectrum, but they said ISPs are going to start providing HomeKit-enabled routers, which is really cool. This is an interesting part of the story of Apple killing the airport first-party routers. And I don't know what it means for that exactly. They certainly didn't announce any yet. But, if a router is HomeKit-enabled, I think that's good enough for me. And I'm definitely going to want to switch to those. Messages got a ton of features. You get a profile in Messages now. So you get to set your name and a profile picture so that when you text somebody that you've never texted with, they get your name and picture so they know who you are. I think that's really cool. And it appears when you send them a message, so you can't like look somebody up. You have to actually send that person a message for them to see who you are, which is great. Mm-hmm. They added a bunch of new makeup and accessories for Memoji, which we don't have to talk about, so we can save like 5 minutes that they spent on it on their keynote. But they seem like they want to make it so that you can use your Memoji as your avatar and iMessages, which I'm not going to do. That's dorky. I'm going to use a photograph of myself like a person. But you know, for those who are really into Memoji, which I'm much less into than I was expecting to be, there are a lot of new options.
The stickers are cool, and I see people using the stickers a lot, just like they did with Bitmoji a little while ago. So that'll be
yes, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's worth mentioning. Now you can get stickers that of your Memoji that show up in the emoji picker the same place as the regular emoji do, which is really handy for using them. And the cool thing about it is it lets people without true depth cameras on their phones or iPads use Memoji still, because it will use like pre-baked expressions instead of tracking your face.
That's right.
So that's cool. It sucks that we won't have time to really talk about all the new camera and photos stuff, but there's new effects for portrait lighting, including an intensity effect that sort of simulates moving a light source closer or farther from someone. The settings, the editing of settings of photos are just redesigned in a way that's way nicer and easier.
You can rotate videos now.
Yeah, I'm getting to the video part. You can add, there's new settings. So you have vignette and noise reduction and white balance reduction adjustment and stuff. So it's like all, you can do all the photo editing right in the Photos app now. But now, and as Drew has teased, it's all coming to video as well. Mm-hmm. So not only can you rotate, you get all the filters and all the effects live on videos in your Photos app. Like, you don't even have to use a pro video editing app to like make your videos look way better.
Right. There's like color grading in there.
Yeah, it's insane. So, you know, it sets the bar very, very high for the kinds of stuff people can do with their photos and videos.
I'm hoping that some of the features that have been hard for a long time will be easier. Like, trimming a video is way harder than it should be.
Oh, yes.
So I don't know if things like trimming will be better or if they'll just still exist. But regardless, there's a lot of features that have been basically impossible to do, or you have to build really crazy shortcuts or use apps that are either super outdated or crazy expensive for no reason to make it happen. There wasn't a lot of options. And so them adding all of this is very, very good.
Yeah. Rotating videos is the classic example. You had to have iMovie on your phone. The easiest way was that you had to have iMovie on your phone. You had to export the video to iMovie, rotate it, and then export it back to Photos in order to rotate a video.
And you missed out on the create a project import. Like, it was ridiculous. Yeah. So it's much better now. Photos, the app, is the thing that I was thinking of when I was talking earlier about how the app store on the Apple Watch is looking more organic and natural and good. Photos has done a really big shift where they are changing the way that you see everything within the app and kind of trying to whittle away the amount of just sheer photos they're putting on the screen at once to create something that looks more pleasing. They're actually like completely removing screenshots and duplicates from your view. I'm sure you can go and find them in some like all tab or something like that.
There is a screenshots tab already, so you can see them there.
Right.
It's like buried as it should be.
Yeah. But now they are showing you a day view. Was it a day view, a month view, and a year view? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a little sub tab bar now when you're in the photos tab, and it says years, months, days, and then all photos. And they seem to flow seamlessly into each other, which is pretty cool.
And this it's building upon the features that Photos has already had, the For You tab, where they show you important memories, and they're just putting those memories inside of these new formats, trying to helpfully show you things such as birthdays or annual events like WWDC for the developers, you know, themselves. And that's really cool. I think it's going to make the photo app much more interesting to just open up and look through, and we'll lose a lot less photos because of this, I think. So it's exciting.
That was a very good job of succinctly summarizing it, given that we have 12 minutes left.
Yeah, we got more to cover.
They did something that impressed both of us a lot, which is that they just sort of announced that AirPods work better now.
Yes.
And this is a thing that they're capable of doing with all kinds of seemingly just like, you know, like sealed up little tiny accessories now, because they all have computers inside. AirPods, Siri can now read messages as you get them. Like, you get the ding, and then you get Siri says, you know, Drew says, can you record on Sunday? And then you can dictate your response back, and you don't have to look at any screen. That's amazing. Siri, it's in Siri Kit, so third-party apps can do it too. And the other thing that AirPods got is one-tap handoff style audio sharing, so that you can now, if somebody else has AirPods, you can listen to the same thing on the same device at the same time, which is fun. I can imagine doing that.
Absolutely.
HomePod got handoff also, which is good. Like, so if you come home and you want to switch your podcast to the speaker in your room instead of your headphones, you can do it with handoff. But you have to hold it up to the HomePod, which is kind of weird, because like my HomePod is on top of my fridge in the kitchen, I'd rather like throw it with a button. Yeah, but we'll see. They added live radio to HomePod, which is cool. Something I'll never listen to, but hey, there you go. It's got at least the beginnings of voice recognition for personalization, so it can tell who's talking. And that works with music recommendations, messages, reminders, notes, phone, and calendar events. So just by voice, it can tell which person in your family is making those requests. CarPlay also got a huge update. I've still only used CarPlay in rental cars, so I don't have very much experience with it, but the UI looks better. It's got smart suggestions from Siri now too, with things like open your garage door, which seems like a helpful thing to have pop up in a very visible way on the dashboard of your car.
Right.
It seems like third-party apps are getting more support. Shortcuts is built in now, so it's pre-installed on phones. Now it's the place to manage all of your shortcuts. Before, the ones you added to Siri were in the Siri settings in the Settings app, so now all shortcuts are in one place. Thankfully, that makes a lot more sense. And there's a wizard now to sort of talk you through how you create like fancier multi-step shortcuts yourself. Really amazing improvement in the quality of Siri's voice. There's now no more chopped up actual human syllables. Like they used to record people's voices saying all these weird things and then chop those up to make the voices. And now they're using neural text speech machine learning. So it's fully computer generated. It sounds a lot more natural. It still sounds like a robot, but it sounds like the robot from Star Trek. It doesn't sound like, like a cartoon version of a voice. So you know you're talking to a robot, but it's a nice one. And then they listed like 100 new iPhone features that they didn't even talk about. And the two that I picked up that I need to say out loud are an option to send unknown callers directly to voicemail without making your phone ring. Oh my God, turning that on instantaneously. Then also he said separate iCloud accounts for personal and work that you can add to your device, which is really great. Because I know a lot of people who are shifting to using iCloud for work now because of security and, you know, wanting the apps and everything and being able to have separate accounts. You know, like if your company will pay for a terabyte of iCloud storage for your work account, like now you can get to that on your phone. So that's awesome.
Hello, internet friends. It's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key.
Okay, so then they said, hey, we forgot to talk about something that we usually talk about during iOS, which is iPad. And now we got the big reveal of the thing that was already revealed by the lawyers before the keynote started, which is that iPad OS is its own thing. Do you want to drive for iPad OS?
Yeah, sure. We can talk about that because this is the part that I was the most excited about the entire time, which is that the iPad OS is now its own full-featured thing that gets a bunch of features that, make this entire operating system way more functional and get rid of a lot of the pain points that have either come up over time or been there since the beginning. The thing that I am most excited about is the thing that is the feature of my dreams, which is putting widgets on the home screen. I think it was like one of the first things I ever mentioned on an episode of Internet Friends that I would love to be able to swap that widget screen and make it my primary thing that pops up every time. I wish that they could rotate around and, you know, figure themselves out and let me just use the widgets because the widgets almost always know what I'm trying to do on my phone better than I do. And so even though they're not going to like magically, you know, reorganize themselves, I can now pin the widgets to my home screen. I'm going to find out exactly how many widgets I can pin to my home screen and use all of them because it's awesome to be able to have that now.
It looked like how it works is that you slide over a pane from the left side and it smushes your home screen, your app icons over, and then you get the like a column that has the widgets in it.
Right.
And it looks like maybe that stays there until you close it, which is, I hope, what it is, because that's what you want to do. Right?
Absolutely. Yes.
But it doesn't mix widgets in with the apps like Android does.
No.
It gives you this organized place and you can put it away. If what you want is all the app icons, you could put it away by closing the drawer.
The problem is I never want all the app icons. So I'm very curious to see how this works in like landscape and portrait orientation and this and that. But yeah it looks very good. The other thing is that there's like a new picker type of way of getting through slide over apps. Basically, split view and slide over and all of these things are just much more easy to use now. You can change out the app that's that second app in split view really easily. You can have two different, you can have two versions of the same app running side by side. You can do all kinds of crazy stuff. And it made me really excited to see how full featured that got. And one of the ways that they made that happen was basically like a version of App Expose for the iPad, which I would have never really considered a good option, but it looks amazing. And I think it's going to be very functional to use.
Yeah, that was the one piece of how multitasking in one app on the iPad would work that I didn't think of. And it works, of course, in the most dead obvious Apple-y way possible, which is if you want to see, now that you can pin like notes, for example, to a bunch of different spaces. So you can have notes, one note pinned to Safari, one note pinned to Mail, one note pinned to Notes. The way you if you wanted to find one of those many notes you're working on, the way you do it is you pull up your dock or go to your home screen, and you hold down on the notes icon, and then you get a multitasking picker that just shows you the apps or spaces with notes in it. And then right. You can browse through and see what's going on the screen and find the one you're looking for.
Beyond that, everything else also looks good. It's kind of the story. It's all good now, man.
Yes.
Safari is good. Files is good. Everything is good. Files seems to be what people have been wanting it to be for a long time, which is you can read USB drives. You can read SD cards. You can import photos right into different apps. You can edit, like you can make PDFs out of stuff inside of files. It feels much more fully featured and functional than it's ever been before. And Safari itself now has the ability for you to have a basically comparable experience to what you would get on the desktop, being able to edit sites like Squarespace and all of the things that have been really big pain points for me as a user of the iPad as my primary device. It seems like a lot of that's going to be going away with this new version of iOS, or I'm sorry, this new version of iPad OS.
Yeah. We missed a ton of stuff because they showed it on slides that just like had 150 things on them and were up for less than 1 second. There are now native fonts on the iPad, which I assume is on iPhone as well. Mm-hmm. And they're in the App Store. You can download fonts from the App Store. How cool is that?
Very good.
So no more of these ridiculous apps that install profiles to get new fonts on your iPad. Faster scrolling. They reduced the latency of the pencil in software, which is, you know, another one of those examples of just making your locked up little tiny accessory just better immediately. And that's it for iPad OS. We're definitely going over an hour, but we'll try and keep it as close to 1 hour as possible.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we don't have to spend that much time on the Mac because they dedicated most of their time to a Mac that you and I will never own in our entire lives.
Absolutely not.
The much anticipated update to the Mac Pro that fixes all the problems that, with the 2013 little tiny trash can Mac Pro. The thing that is most hilarious about this to me is that it seems to almost be like a screw you to the people who want a Mac Pro.
It kind of feels that way.
Like, we'll make you the best Mac Pro that you could ever possibly want, and you will be happy with it. But they referred to the last Mac Pro, Mac Pro nerds refer to the last one they liked, the sort of gray tower one, as the cheese grater, because it sort of had, it vaguely resembled a cheese grater. And Apple just basically built a stainless steel, like, giant cheese grater that looks exactly like a cheese grater.
Now the last one doesn't look like a cheese grater compared to this one.
Yes. Like, this one probably functions as an actual cheese grater if you have gigantic blocks of cheese.
Right.
So all you need to know about it is it's a stainless steel frame that lets you get at it from 360 degrees all around the thing to put modules inside. So it's dramatically like upgradable and customizable, which is exactly what people want.
Right.
And it sucks so much power that you wouldn't even believe. And the reason they did it this way is so that you can build it out as a video machine or a photo editing machine. And the base model machine is probably good enough for music and some simpler things.
We are not the people that should be talking about this because it is not for us, but it is obscene. And everything about it is obscene because it has the best of the best of everything. And they're going to charge you for the best of the best. So people that want this and have been complaining about it are about to have a lot of money to put up to get it. But it's exactly what everyone's wanted it to be. And honestly, better. The amount of stuff this thing can handle is wild. And I'm excited to see people actually use it. I will not be one of those people.
No, ever. You'll never be able to afford to. No. They've announced a new display also, which is something that was anticipated. They're calling it the Pro Display XDR. XDR stands for Extreme Dynamic Range, which is something that Apple made up. That's like, basically, it's high dynamic range. I mean, they're trying to check all of the boxes that every video professional wants. They referred to a previously existing category of monitors that cost $43,000 and still don't have all the features people want. Right. So they made it. Apple makes a display again. Guess what? It costs $6,000. They have a matte version, which I do want to mention. The matte version of this display, which costs another $1,000. So the base price of the display is $5,000. The matte version is $6,000, and the matte version is created by like actually slicing up the texture of the glass so that the light refracts off of it randomly. It's not just like a coating. It's that, which is awesome, but it costs another $1,000. And it is true that the display costs $6,000 because the stand for the display costs $1,000, and it's not included.
I don't know how you would not have the stand, I guess, is right.
Well, you could mount it on the wall or something, yeah. I guess. But like that was the thing that I referred to at the beginning, where people were just like, ooh, yeah. no. Yeah. And like it threw the presenter who was up for the first time off his game big time, because that was a very big boo line.
That's not his fault.
No,
poor
not
guy.
His fault. The computer, the Mac Pro, starts at $6,000, which is a very good price, I think, for that computer. Like, I think that it was expected to be more. Of course, you could build it out to $20,000 if you wanted to.
And most people will.
Yeah, and most people will. But so you're looking at over $10,000 you're looking at over $11,000 at minimum if right. you want this computer and the display that goes with it. And that's without a stand
yeah.
for the display. So with the stand, it's $12,000 starting price together.
You can imagine how much the two monitors and the device that were on the presentation floor were. It was yes. a lot of money in one yes. little table.
So that's the Mac Pro. The Mac OS was updated to 10.15. The code name is Catalina, which I love. It's a beautiful place. It's a very good name for a California code name for an operating system. The highlighting feature of macOS Catalina is the death of iTunes, which which did sort of leak in the past week. Craig Federighi did a very funny sketch, which I think partially recovered from the like jaw-dropping statement of the $1,000 monitor stand that came right before it, where he listed all of the great features that have been added to iTunes over the years. And he said, what if we just added more? What if we added calendar and mail and Safari to iTunes and it gets its own dock? And people mostly went with him. It was pretty well done. And then he said, no, the real solution is the future of iTunes is not one app, but three. It's Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, and Apple TV, all of which are now Mac apps. I think I can sort of smush them all together into one thing, which is that basically they all have the same design. It's the new modern Mac design. There is a sidebar on the left that has colorful icons. It's very visually easy to scan. Since all three of these apps are for different Apple media properties, they have the same concept organizing that sidebar. The top section is for streaming content from the Apple service. Then there's a middle section for your local library. And then there's a bottom one for playlists or stations, depending on, you know, what the vocabulary of the media type you're using is. And so basically Apple Music, the music app for Mac is what we always wanted iTunes to just be, which is just an app for managing your music and listening to music, and podcasts and TV all work the same way. The one thing that was a big question mark is, how are you going to manage devices? Like, if you do local iTunes backups or, you know, sync things locally. And the answer is the obvious answer, which is that it shows up in the sidebar of the Finder now, like an external drive does, and or a mounted, you know, like a network mounted other computer, like plugging in your device makes it show up on your sidebar on your Mac. And that's where the backups happen. It's so much better. Another great feature they announced for the Mac is Sidecar, which is going to kill a small but cool market of third-party apps that let you use your iPad as a secondary display for your Mac. That's now something you can do natively. And it lets you use the Pencil for apps on the Mac that support tablets, which is really cool for graphics people. They have built out voice control for accessibility users for the entire device, including on iOS also. And it uses this cool system of numbers and grids so that you can call up number labels for everything on the screen and just say the number. And that's how the computer knows which item in the list you're talking about or whatever it is.
Thoughtfully done.
Yeah, very thoughtfully done and well demonstrated too. This was also the point of the presentation where they introduced Find My, which is the new combined Find My Friends and Find My iPhone apps that now shows all your devices and it shows people also. And they mentioned that it can now locate devices that are offline, which is amazing because oftentimes Macs are closed, you know, so that they're not online. But now they send out Bluetooth pulses even while they're asleep that are secure, and other nearby Apple devices pick those up, even if they're not yours, you know, pick up and report those pings to Apple, but it's all encrypted and it's piggybacked on other traffic to the network anyway. So it like barely uses any energy or bandwidth and it's all secure. And so that's how Apple can find your Mac, even if it's off, even if it's sleeping. And all the apps on macOS that are also on iOS get all the features that we mentioned before that that they got on iOS. Screen time is coming to the Mac, which is awesome. And then they announced the thing that has been formerly known as Marzipan, which is now called Project Catalyst, which allows people to create Mac apps based on their existing iPad apps, which they started last year with four apps that were in, that were sort of previews of the technology that that weren't super great. Those apps are all getting improved, and now it's going to be possible to build much better Mac apps just using the existing code base of iPad apps. The example that they chose, which was one that I was super stoked about, which is Twitter. Twitter is apparently going to be out on day one with a Mac app again, finally, because they can just put their iOS app on the Mac,
which is great.
So this is going to be great for Mac users, and it's going to be great for iOS developers. It's going to be great for everyone because now the ecosystem is becoming unified.
Yeah.
We've run out of time to talk about, the real reason why that's exciting, because there's more cross-platform stuff connecting all of these platforms together and making the software that runs on all of them share code, and it's going to really change the platform. And also another thing that will change the platform, will change everything probably, is all the new augmented reality stuff, which is getting us awful close to our fantasy world we talk about on the show all the time.
That's
about
right.
An AR world where we don't have glass rectangles as our computers anymore.
Yeah.
So let's save that for another special, and we'll talk about the kind of blinding bright future stuff another time. What
Absolutely.
Do you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. The fact that AR moved from the middle of Mac's feature list to their kind of the equivalent of a one more thing is mm-hmm. is very, very telling about the future of augmented reality for Apple. So that deserves more than a rush through. So I'm excited to talk to you about that. But today was a good day, and there's a yes. lot of features on a lot of devices. The question that I have is, John, are you going to install these betas or not, man?
Oh, don't ask me that.